From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin. Today, making the concept of credit default swap a little bit simpler, with Ryan Gosling, a game of Jenga, and an economics professor from SMU, our big screen team talks The Big Short. And I look back over the year in North Texas theater with Jerome Weeks of Art and Seek. But first, a Nobel laureate whose pivotal discovery helped scientists better understand human thought in the nature of cancer died yesterday. Dr. Alfred G. Gilman, who was 74, once led the medical school at UT Southwestern and chaired the pharmacology department for two decades. He shared the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 1994 with Dr. Martin Rodbell for their discovery of G proteins, a major stride in cell research. Dr. Gilman believed science education should be challenging and advocated for that. He wrote an op-ed pleading with the Texas Board of Education in 2009 to push back against attempts to stop teaching evolution in schools. In 2012, he became the first UT Southwestern Nobel laureate to donate his medal to the Perot Museum of Nature and Science, hoping it could inspire a new generation of scientists. Another loss this year, Jack Alder, the co-founder of Theater 3, was the biggest loss to North Texas arts, not just the theater community. Alder was a voice for arts funding and social causes. Considering Alder's death and the rest of 2015 in theater, I sat down to talk with Art and Seek's Jerome Weeks. Jack Alder's passing was certainly a loss to Theater 3, to North Texas, but did it have any larger significance?
It was a changing of the guard. It's a cliche, but true. Jack was 80. He was the last of the theater founders from the 1960s. That's when the regional theater movement really took off. So, amazingly, Jack was present at the beginning, as it were. Here's Alder in his last live performance. For the Bruce Wood Dance Company, Jack played an older man in the ruins of his childhood home.
My yesterdays are this debris, and I, alas, am 70. And I, alas, am 70.
Now, Jerry Russell, he founded Stage West. He died 2 years ago and would have been 79 this year. Add Jack's death to Jerry's, and you can't help but see a generation passing.
Not to wax philosophical, but it's happened before. A new generation of arts leaders steps up.
One certainly hopes so. But Jack and Jerry, each was, to use an old-fashioned term, a man of the theater.
Is that anything like being a man of the world?
Kind of, actually. It means you've done everything in a theater, acted, directed, managed. Young artists who are starting to run an art gallery, a dance or theater company, they often say, "I even clean the toilets." Well, that multitasking is typical with any tiny startup. But 8 years ago, Jerry Russell was installing theater seats, and he was nearly 70. Arts leaders like that, they become the soul of a company. They teach classes, they inspire younger artists. All that makes them very hard to replace. It's like trying to hire three different people, or start all over again.
But surely it happens. Otherwise, I mean, how does any arts group outlive its founders?
True. Classic example. Tom Hughes started running the Dallas Summer Musicals in 1961. He died suddenly in 1994, and a lot of people feared, there goes the show. But Michael Jenkins took over, and this year he celebrated the Summer Musicals' 75th anniversary. So yeah, these changeovers do happen successfully, but it can mean a redefinition.
What else are theaters doing these days?
Companies are moving. Companies are experimenting with spaces. Kitchen Dog Theater spent 20 years at the McKinney Avenue Contemporary. This year, they moved to a possibly temporary home. It's a converted warehouse in the design district called the Green Zone. And several daring little groups like Dead White Zombies and Prism Co. have been hunting around in West Dallas. They've been adapting things like metalworking shops. Back in the 80s, when Deep Ellum warehouses went multi-use, theaters like Undermain and Pegasus sprang up. If that taught us anything, it's that when North Texas ever has affordable, underused places, artists come knocking. It's one of the upsides of recessions and changing neighborhoods. You even get unconventional fun like Shakespeare in the Bar, which is exactly what its name indicates, Shakespeare in a Bar.
So, Jerome, we've got time for one more highlight from 2015.
That would be Stagger Lee at the Dallas Theater Center. Musicals like that take a ton of time, money, and talent. The Theater Center has imported lots of musicals, but that means most of that work is already done. We're just the test market. Stagger Lee was different. The Theater Center chose to spend years developing it, finding money for it. It was homegrown, even if much of the talent was imported. In the end, I think Will Power's book for Stagger Lee still needed work. But Justin Ellington's music and Patricia McGregor's directing were terrific.
Thanks, Jerome.
It's a pleasure, Justin.
A new movie called The Big Short looks at the burst of the 2008 housing bubble through the eyes of people who bet their fortunes on it. This week, our big screen team talks to an economics professor from SMU's Cox School of Business about the movie's biggest challenge, making very complex financial concepts simple.
I'm Stephen Becker with KERA.
And I'm Chris Wagner, culture critic for the Dallas Morning News.
Today we're joined by Mike Davis, who teaches economics in the Cox School of Business at SMU. Mike, thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
We wanted to talk to you as a business educator about how this movie handles pretty complex business terms that are important to understanding the story. So we need to know about things like how to short the market and what mortgage-backed securities are and my personal favorite, synthetic collateralized debt obligations.
Easy for you to say.
Not so much. I want to play a clip in which Ryan Gosling's character is using a Jenga game, you know, that game with all the little stacked blocks, to explain credit default swaps.
So you're offering us a chance to short this pile of blocks. How?
With something called a credit default swap. It's like insurance on the bond, and if it goes bust, you can make 10 to 1, even 20 to 1 return, and it's already slowly going bust.
10 to 1, 20 to 1, no way.
And no one's paying attention. Let me put it this way. I'm standing in front of a burning house, and I'm offering you fire insurance on it.
Throughout the movie, they use metaphors to compare complex financial instruments to real-life ideas, and I wondered how you thought that was handled.
Well, first of all, it's very clever. People will have a much better idea about what these things are after they see the movie. If I'm going to criticize, the metaphors give you a great understanding of what these instruments are. They don't give you a very good idea about why they were created and what they were really intended to do.
I'm wondering, as somebody who knows a lot about these issues and thinks a lot about these issues, what you thought of the movie's comedic approach of turning this really rather tragic story into a comedy.
What's not to like about a comedy? And I laughed. It was good. I think it's one of these movies that you have to watch carefully. It's not a Netflix with the kids running around in the background kind of movie. It's complicated, and the jokes are subtle. You really have to watch for them. But when you get them, they're funny.
One of the techniques that they use to really grab your attention and make sure you're paying attention is they just break the fourth wall. And the purpose that it serves is it forces the audience to like really pay attention. What did you think about when they did that?
It was just entertaining. I wish movies would do more of that kind of stuff. Just say what you want people to understand. It was really cool.
How important do you think it was that these guys who saw what was coming and tried to short the market, they were outsiders?
That makes a great story, right? But it's actually not true. A lot of people were looking at the housing market and getting nervous. What these guys did, though, was that they had the guts to put their whole fortunes on the line. So it wasn't like they saw something no one else saw. A lot of people were worried about the bubble. But, man, they went in big time with a lot of money. And one thing I liked a lot about the movie, it showed you very clearly that it was not a slam dunk, that they could have been basically closed out of the market and lost everything. That didn't happen, but as you see in the movie, it could have.
Mike Davis, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thanks. This was fun.
Thank you.
That was a big screen team, Stephen Becker and Chris Wagner. By the way, Christmas Day could be one of the top five warmest ever in North Texas. Forecasters say if we hit 72 degrees, we should slide into the number five position for balmiest North Texas Christmases. Mostly sunny skies expected today, though, high near 71. Tonight should be partly cloudy with a low around 52. Tomorrow, much the same. It's tomorrow night. We're looking at that 50% chance for showers and storms with a low near 66. And that chance for stormy weather continues through the weekend. It's on Monday that there's a chance for snow with a high in the 40s. It's about 53 degrees in Dallas and Fort Worth, 52 in Tyler, 50 in Wichita Falls. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.